No, we're just trying to win this dance.
You're staying alive on 101.9 with Marco on Astrotalk.
We got the Refugees All Stars, Robert Devin in the club, Y Clef Jean.
Shorty got back. Should I ask him for a dance? Hold on, there's too many in the wolf pack. And besides, dirty cats talking to her, buying her fake furs and taking her to the fever.
Welcome, you're listening to CITR 101.9. It's Thursday, it's 3 o'clock, and it's time for another 1/2 hour of astronomy talk with your host Marco on CITR's Astro Talk.
Ouija's, check the spelling, R-E-F-U-G-E. Get the CD from Sam Goody. You ain't even close with the rhymes that you wrote. Don't be mad cause you broke. Let me clear my throat.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9 FM.
Me. I'm eating mangoes in Trinidad with attorneys. Yeah. My food slang flow worldwide like a current. Went to every spot where nobody got insurance. Rubber do the math, you ain't half nicks at it. My man's claim true, you forget about it. Ho-ho, just a new sense, like my influence. Well recognized, you a lie trying to do it. Got juice, told your lady, oops, we nuts, baby. Smooth and charismatic, automatic, you gon' save me. God bless the dead as my son survive. We strive to teach you, baby, and stay alive.
Welcome. You're on AstroTalk with Marco on CITR 101.9. Well, I survived last week's show. I think I survived. I tried to talk about wormholes, and it was weird because all the strange terminology, all the strange language that wormhole theorists use to talk about wormholes, and I guess one of them is exotic matter. Well, what's exotic matter? They say the wormhole theorists, I don't know how they come to the conclusion, but they say that for a wormhole to be held open, then we need exotic matter. So what does that mean? What is exotic matter? We know what matter is, so we're going to look at that quickly. I'm just curious about that. So what is exotic matter? So I'm looking at a paper, and it says, in this paper, we develop an iterative approach to span the whole set of exotic matter models to be able to drive a transversible wormhole. The method, based on a Taylor expansion of metric and stress energy tensor components in a neighborhood of the wormhole throat, reduces the Einstein equations to an infinite set of algebraic conditions which can be satisfied order by order. So that makes sense, doesn't it? That's very straightforward. Not. So that's one thing when we're talking about wormholes. These theorists start getting into these complicated explanations like this. This method is then applied to some relevant examples of exotic matter characterization by a constant energy density, and that also shows an isotropic behavior in the stress energy tensor or obeying to a quintessence-like equation of state. So that's what they talk about when they talk about wormholes. That's why it's kind of a weird thing to talk about, because what are they saying? We don't know. 99.999% of the people don't know what they're saying. So I'll just quickly read this and we'll move on from wormholes. In physics, exotic matter is matter that somehow deviates from normal matter and has exotic properties. Well, that's straightforward. A broader definition of exotic matter is any kind of non-baryonic matter that is not made of baryons. Okay, so non-baryonic matter. So that's what exotic matter is, non-baryonic matter. That is not made of baryons, the subatomic particles such as protons and neutrons, of which ordinary matter is composed. Exotic matter has been considered a colloquial term for matter such as dark matter, negative mass, or complex mass. So types of exotic matter, there are several types. Hypothetical particles and state of matter that have exotic physical properties that would violate known laws of physics, such as a particle having a negative mass. Okay, there's our first breakthrough. Hypothetical particles in state of matter that have not yet been encountered, but whose properties but within the realm of would be within the realm of mainstream physics if found to exist. Doesn't say much there. Several particles whose existence has been experimentally confirmed that are conjectured to be exotic hadrons and within the standard model. Doesn't say much there. States of matter that are poorly understood, such as dark matter and mirror matter. Ordinary matter placed under high pressure, which may result in dramatic changes in its physical or chemical properties. Degenerate matter and exotic atoms. So, reading all through that didn't really tell me a lot of what exotic matter is. But here we have a wormhole. Apparently, you have to be able to hold the wormhole open with exotic matter, and it will connect you to, it's a shortcut through another to another part of the universe or another universe. So last night I was watching a bit of the show Interstellar, and that's what they talked about, but I kept turning. Okay, so what are we going to talk about today? Let's talk about a stellar thief. What's a stellar thief? That sounds pretty cool, doesn't it? Stellar thief. Okay, this is dated April 26, 2018, and it is on www.nasa.gov. Oh, by the way, I'm thinking of doing a show on neutrinos because I did a show on neutrinos about 4 years ago, but I didn't save it. So I will probably do a show on neutrinos again because every second, about 6 billion neutrinos are going through my thumb. And if you think your thumb is about 1 square inch or 1 square centimeter or a couple square centimeters, imagine how many neutrinos are going through your body every second. And after I do the show, it's 60 minutes, so that's 3,600 seconds. So there would be about 20 trillion neutrinos going through my thumb during the show. So neutrinos are very low mass particles. Before, they didn't even know if it had mass, but now they do. And there's all these particles, I guess, when you're talking about physics, you can't divorce yourselves from them. So, and astronomy especially. So, here's an example of a neutrino. In 1987, there's a supernova in the Large Magic Linux Cloud. I believe it's in the Large Magic Linux Cloud. It went supernova. It was called Supernova 1987A. And just before we saw the supernova, there was a rather large detection of neutrinos in Earth. So there are neutrino contraptions that try to detect neutrinos. They don't try to trap a neutrino. They see a streak of blue light if a neutrino reacts with a certain something, certain chemical. So they are made in supernovas and in the sun. So there's neutrinos made in the sun every second. There's billions and billions and trillions of them. And when light is made in the center of the sun, it takes 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 years to reach the surface, and then about 8.5 minutes to reach us. So the light we see was actually made in the sun tens of hundreds of thousands of years ago, maybe even millions of years ago, whereas a neutrino will leave the center of the sun as soon as it's made and it will hit us in 8 minutes, 8.5 minutes. So the neutrino physics is an important field after 1987, after the supernova. So neutrinos are pretty cool little things. They have mass and they change flavors. So it's called the Majorana particle, where a particle can be its own antiparticle. So they change from particle to antiparticle and different kinds of neutrinos. So now I'm going to talk about a stellar thief. It's surviving a companion to a supernova. So, oh, I should remind you guys that on May 1st, I am interviewing Trina Ray. She's a mission scientist with the Cassini mission. So the Cassini mission operated in the Saturn system for 13 years. I believe on September 15th, 2017, it ran out of fuel, so they crash-landed it into Saturn. There was a dramatic dive in between Saturn's ring and the planet, and then it burned up in Saturn's atmosphere. So I'm going to have Trina Ray an interview on Tuesday, and hopefully I can have that ready for next Thursday when I do my show. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll talk with her for about an hour. And I had her on 4 years ago, or two or three years ago, so I'm going to have her on again. So it's very interesting stuff that she does, and she was on the Voyager mission. So we're going to have Trina Ray on, and let's get back to our show. So it's called Stellar Thief is a Surviving Companion to a Supernova. When I was doing my astronomy news a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about the TESS telescope, and there's a scientist who is anxiously awaiting the TESS telescope to send back its data because he won't be studying the planets around these stars. He wants to research white dwarf stars. So our sun will turn into a white dwarf one day. And the thing is about a white dwarf, they're wondering, they haven't found it yet, but they're wondering if any planet can survive the process when our sun, for example, when it reaches the end of its life, it will first turn into a red giant, spew out a lot of its atmosphere, and then eventually condense into a white dwarf, a very dense white dwarf. So he's wondering if they can actually find a existing planet that has survived the white dwarf stage or the white dwarf process. So our sun will turn into a white dwarf, I believe a carbon white dwarf. So it'll be a diamond, a big diamond. Okay, so here we go. Stellar Thief is a surviving companion to a supernova. This is dated April 26, 2018. Okay, so 17 years ago, astronomers witnessed a supernova go off 40 million light years away in the galaxy called NGC 7424, located in the southern constellation Grus, G-R-U-S, the crane. I never knew there was a Grus. Okay. Now, in the fading afterglow of that explosion, NASA's Hubble Space Telescope has captured the first image of a surviving companion to a supernova. This picture is the most compelling evidence that some supernovas originate in double star systems. So says Stuart Ryder from, oh, just wait, let me clarify something. I was talking about, can a planet survive a supernova or a star going white dwarf? Well, he's talking about here, can a companion star survive when its companion, so there's two stars in the system, one of the stars goes supernova, can the one that doesn't go supernova survive the supernova explosion? Okay, so that's what this is talking about. Okay, so now I'm quoting somebody called Stuart Ryder from the Australian Astronomical Observatory in Sydney, Australia, and lead author of the study, and quote, "We know that the majority of massive stars are in binary pairs. Many of these binary pairs will interact and transfer gas from one star to the other when their orbits bring them close together," end quote. So the companion to the supernova's progenitor star was no innocent bystander to the explosion. It siphoned off almost all of the hydrogen from the doomed star's stellar envelope, the region that transports energy from the star's core to its atmosphere. Millions of years before the primary star went supernova, the companion's thievery created an instability in the primary star, causing it to episodically blow off a cocoon and shells of hydrogen gas before the catastrophe. The supernova, called SN 2001, small I, small g, is categorized as a type 1b, no, 2b, stripped envelope supernova. Type 1A is a core collapse supernova. So this is a type 2B stripped envelope supernova. This type of supernova is unusual because most, but not all, of the hydrogen is gone prior to the explosion. This type of exploding star was first identified in 1987 by team member Alex Filipenko of the University of California, Berkeley. Oh, Alex Filipenko, he's famous. He's always on TV, so he's a cool guy. Okay, now I'm going to comment on the picture here. It shows supernova 2001, small I, small g, and so something shows a bunch of pictures, and I don't know if I can interpret the captions. One says VLT 2002, I think that's the Very Large Telescope Array in 2002. Another one is the Gemini 2004, and it doesn't show much. And then the surviving companion, shown by Hubble in 2016. So I'm going to read the caption under the photo. 17 years ago, okay, so this article is called Stellar Thief is a Surviving Companion to a Supernova, and it's April 26, 2018. 17 years ago, astronomers witnessed supernova 2001 IG, 40 million light years away in the galaxy NGC 7424, in the southern constellation Grus, the Crane. Shortly after, scientists photographed the supernova with the European Southern Observatory's Very Large Telescope, VLT, in 2002. 2 years later, they followed up with the Gemini Southern Observatory, which hinted at the presence of a surviving binary companion. Okay, so it shows the companion, very small. As the supernova's glow faded, scientists focused the Hubble Space Telescope on that location in 2016. They pinpointed and photographed the surviving companion, which was possible only due to Hubble's exquisite resolution and ultraviolet sensitivity. Hubble's observation of SN 2001, small I, small g, provide the best evidence yet that some supernovas, what do they say, supernovas? They should say supernovae, that's the plural. Supernovae originate in double star systems, end quote. It's a picture from NASA, ESA, and a bunch of other things. Okay, so more than half of the star systems in our universe are 2, 3, 4, 5 star systems, 6, 7 star systems. So I believe the majority of stars are in pairs. The closest star system to us is 4.3 light years away, and it's a triple star system. I believe it's in, Andromeda. No, it's not done. Sorry, I should know. Okay, but anyway, so it shows the companion star survived the supernova explosion. So it's weird when these stars get into pairs. Sometimes one of the stars siphons gas off the other one, and because it's siphoning gas, it explodes. Now, what it seems to be saying here is the gas is the star that had its gas siphoned was the one that exploded. I'm not sure. I'll read on to see what it says. Okay. How stripped envelope supernovas lose their outer envelope is not entirely clear. They were originally thought to come from single stars with very fast winds that pushed off the outer envelopes. The problem was that when astronomers started looking for the primary stars from which supernovas were spawned, they couldn't find them from any stripped envelope supernovas. So says team member Ori Fox of the Space Telescope Institute in Baltimore, Maryland, and quote, "That was especially bizarre because astronomers expected that they would be the most massive and the brightest progenitor stars. Also, the sheer number of stripped envelope supernovas is greater than predicted," end quote. That fact led scientists to theorize that many of the primary stars were in lower mass binary systems, and they set out to prove it. So I'm still not sure. There's a binary here, and they're saying one of the stars exploded. And when it did, usually that spells the death of its companion, but the companion survived. But I'm not sure if what they're saying is the star that stripped the other star, did it explode? Or the star whose hydrogen got stripped exploded. So I think that's what they're saying. So why don't I read on and see what it says? Okay, so looking for a binary companion after a supernova explosion is no easy task. So as I said, there was an astronomer looking for planets that can survive a stellar catastrophe. So that's what I was talking about last week. So that's what this person hopes. So TESS is the next exoplanet hunter. They expect to find a lot more planets, exoplanets. Oh, so exoplanets are planets outside our solar system orbiting other stars. But what the scientists were saying is when scientists look for these planets, he's trying to see what information they can give him about the stars, not the planets, the stars. So most exoplanet hunters are interested in planets about stars. He's interested in the stars, not the planets. So he's hoping to find some white dwarf star where a supernova, or sorry, not a supernova, where the star went white dwarf, just like our sun will. So what's going to happen, I believe, our star in a few billion years, 4 or 5 billion years, it's already expanding. I mean, our sun is losing mass, but it's getting bigger. So it's expanding slowly. And what that means, it's pushing the planets out a bit. So I believe Mercury and every planet is being pushed out a bit. But what happens is eventually it will grow so big, it will expand so much that it could engulf Earth. And after it blows off its outer layers, it'll become a white dwarf. But before that process, will it kill Mars? I don't think it'll go all the way to Jupiter, but it will probably swallow up the Earth. So I believe that's what this white dwarf astrophysicist is looking for. Could a planet survive the white dwarf stage? So he's looking for planets outside of white dwarfs. So when our star, it'll go off the main sequence, it'll turn into a red giant, it'll keep expanding, And scientists have all kinds of models, and many of them have predicted that the sun will eventually engulf the Earth. The Earth will be swallowed up by the sun. And then when it blows off all its outer layers, it'll become smaller. It'll turn into a carbon white dwarf, a little star. And it's not a star anymore. It can't do nuclear fusion. So he's looking, can a star survive this process where it goes through the white dwarf stage? So you know what I'm going to do? I just saw my cousin come here. So what I'm going to do is I am going to go on a break, and when I come back, I am going to talk more astronomy. So thank you for listening, and we're talking about white dwarfs and all that stuff. So stay tuned. We are coming back in one. My cousin threw me off. So thank you for listening. I'll be right back.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. Know what I'm saying? Yeah. Break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock on. I was just a young boy living in the hub city. Eastside Compton. Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had everything. Talking about boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast. Come on, baby, where you at? Throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, don't stop, we won't stop. That's why I put it down for the west side.
Didn't seem that long ago.
Oh, no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh, no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke smoking roaches.
DJ Quick West the had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down.
One time for my was in incarceration.
Place a dime with you, but having lots of patience.
Two times for my sisters at the county built.
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
Three times for my that passed away.
I took some tools for you and pray for better days.
One day everything's gonna be fine. But until that day, my only reply is
Westside till I
my
die.
In the air,
wave them like you just don't care.
From LA to the Bay, what you say?
All day, every day,
any damn day.
Take a look around.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, we just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Smash the dirty red scum! Take him in the teeth,
red heads!
Really? Kill!
That's really
kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard tummies! I hate him! I hate him!
Okay, well, You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
What, not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying?
Yes.
quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You realize that typing a response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time. You've stated that you believe there could be an infinite number of parallel universes. Does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you?
Yes. And also a universe where you're funny.
Okay. All right. Look, if you're so smart, what number am I thinking
13.
Of? It was 13. I was thinking of 13. Okay, that was a lucky guess. What am I thinking right now?
That you've been a huge disappointment for your family.
I wasn't thinking that.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9. And I have my guest. Say hi, Giorgio.
Hello.
That's my cousin, Giorgio. He popped in the window and it's surprised me. He said he was going to come by, so he's going to listen to me. So what I was talking about is the majority of star systems are 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6, 7 stars in one system. And some of them, I believe, at the handle of the Big Dipper, you have 2 stars and they orbit each other. And there's another 2 stars that orbit each other. And those 2 star systems orbit each other, so that's 4 stars. And I think they have another 2 or 3 stars. So sometimes you have a lot of stars in one system, and they don't all orbit one in the center. 2 might orbit each other, and those two pairs orbit the other pair. So there are really weird combinations of star systems. And the one that I couldn't come up with, 4.3 light years away, it's called Alpha Centauri. So those are 3 stars, and they are smaller stars than our sun. And I believe one of them, their life expectancy is 20 billion years. The other one is 40, and the other one is 60. So they're small stars, but it's a 3-star system, and it's stable. It somehow orbits. The 3 stars orbit each other in a complex way. I believe 2 stars orbit each other, and the 3rd star orbits those 2 stars. But they're smaller stars. Our sun will last about 11, 12 billion years. These ones will last 20, 40, and 60 billion. So when a star is smaller, it has a lot less pressure. So a big star, a giant star, it's got so much pressure, it burns itself up within a couple of million years, or 10 million years, 5 million years. So that's why they expect of the star Betelgeuse. It's much bigger than the sun. So a lot of things, a lot of relationships are not linear. For example, you have a volume of a sphere. I believe it's 4/3 pi r³. So it goes, the volume goes as the cube of the radius. So that's not a linear relationship. So that's what happens with a lot of these star systems, or these stars. They are so big that there's so much force, so much pressure, so much heat, they burn themselves up very quickly. So the smaller a star is, it's weird. You'd think a bigger a star is, the longer it would last. But no, the bigger it is, the shorter is its lifespan, because it is so big, the forces from all the mass just squishes everything together so quickly, and they burn out very quick. Okay, so let's get back to our article. We were talking about, on the break, I did a lot of research, and I lost, there we are. Okay, so the article I'm talking about, it's called Stellar Thief is a Surviving Companion to a Supernova. So what they had 17 years ago, astronomers witnessed a supernova. This supernova went off 40 million light years away. So it actually went off 40 million light years ago, because it takes 40 million light years for the light from that supernova to reach us on Earth. So we saw it 17 years ago in a galaxy called NGC 724. And what happened is scientists believe that the companion to this one star survived the supernova explosion of the primary star. So usually when a primary star sheds its outer layers in a supernova explosion, it destroys so many things close to it. So planets don't survive and companion stars don't survive. But the Hubble Space Telescope recently saw the companion, and it's a nice picture of the companion. So they believe that even though the supernova exploded and shed all its material in a supernova blast, the companion star survived the supernova blast. So what does this all mean? So I'm going to keep reading the article. Okay, so here I'm going to go back to where I left off last time. And it says, looking for a binary companion. So, of course, I believe the majority of star systems in our universe, or in our galaxy at least, but in our universe, are multiple star systems. And I believe the majority are two star systems. So that's called a binary pair. And they orbit each other. So sometimes they do strange things. One of them might siphon gas off the other one. And because it's siphoning gas from its gravity, and you might have a smaller star, it's very, very dense. And because of its density, and it's got very strong gravity, so it will pull gas off its companion. So that when the gas accumulates on the surface, another supernova goes. So it might have already gone supernova, it might be a neutron star, but it's got a companion, and because of its strong gravity, because it's very dense, so it's got a certain amount of mass packed into a little sphere, so that means its gravity is very strong. So it siphons off gas from its companion, and scientists can see this. And when enough gas accumulates on the surface, it goes supernova again. But what happens, I think they're trying to say here, is one of the gases, or one of the stars, siphon gas off the companion. And the gas and the companion whose gas was siphoned, that's the one that exploded. So that's what I think they're trying to say here. And what happens usually when you have a supernova explosion, a companion gets destroyed in the process because of the incredible amount of energy of the supernova blast. So what happens here is they're looking for a binary companion after a supernova explosion, and that's no easy task because first, it has to be at a relatively close distance to Earth for the Hubble Space Telescope to see a faint star. So this star was 40 million light years away. So it is in our Milky Way. And the Milky Way is about 100,000 light years across. So what happens is if something is 1 billion, 2 billion, 5 billion light years away in another galaxy, it is too faint to see. So first, for astronomers to be able to see the supernova explosion, has to be a relatively close distance to Earth for Hubble to see such a star. So supernova SN2001IG and its companion are about at that limit. So they're just within the limit of Hubble's viewing. So within that distance range, not many supernovas go off. Even more importantly, astronomers have to know the exact position through very precise measurements. So what they say is in a typical galaxy, for example, in our Milky Way galaxy, they believe that there is one supernova per century. So the last supernova we saw in our galaxy, I think, was in 1602, and that's 400 years ago. So it's possible that a supernova went off on the other side of the galaxy, but we can't see it through all the intervening dust and gas. So, but we are long overdue, but this was in another galaxy. Okay. Oh, no, it was in our Milky Way galaxy, so it's 40 million light years away. So it happened 40 million years ago. So that's important. So even though we're seeing it now, the light traveled 40 million years. So that was a long, long time ago. Okay, so looking for a binary companion after a supernova explosion is no easy task. First, it has to be relatively close to Earth. And within that distance range, not many supernovas go off. Because as I said, per galaxy, astronomers believe there should be one supernova explosion per century. So the last supernova we saw in our galaxy was 400 years ago. In 2002, shortly after supernova 2001IG exploded, scientists pinpointed the precise location of the supernova with the European South Observatory's Very Large Telescope in Cerro Panal, Chile. So in 2004, they then followed up with a Gemini Southern Observatory in Cerro Pachon, Chile, another place. This observation first hinted at the presence of a surviving binary companion. So let me put a comment here. There's a place in Chile called the Atacama Desert. So it's probably the driest place on Earth. And now scientists are doing an experiment in the Atacama Desert because they are comparing it to to Mars. So this Atacama Desert is, there is about 1/2 inch of rain per decade. So it's a very dry place. like Mars, which is a very dry place. But Mars is colder than this, but they're doing a lot of research because they're looking at this desert high in the Chile Mountains, and there's very little wind, very little moisture. It's high up there, so there's not much of an atmosphere. But they're looking at studying how life forms can survive in an environment with very little water, because that's what the reality is on the surface of Mars. There's not much water there. So here we have two observatories up in the Chile Mountains. So they're very high. The atmosphere is very stable. It's very, very dry. There's not many clouds. And that's the advantage of being high in the Chile Mountains. It's wonderful. If you'd go up there, you could see the Milky Way at night. So they have two observatories or two telescopes high in the Chile Mountains that are looking at this star system. So I'm going to keep reading the article. So we just found out there's a place called Cerro Paranal in Chile, and there's a place called Cerro Pachon in Chile. So there's the European Southern Observatory's very large telescope in Chile, in Cerro Paranal, and there's the Gemini South Observatory in Cerro Pachon, Chile. And as I told my listeners, if there's any listeners out there, that I was in Hawaii last year, and I went up to the Mauna Kea Observatory, and that was really, really good. They have about seven big telescopes and a bunch of arrays, and these mountain locations are the next best thing to Hubble because we're high in the mountain. The air is very stable, and it's cold, and a lot of telescopes, they work better in the cold, especially if they're cryogenic telescopes. But the air currents, I believe, are good. There's an absence of pollution, of light pollution. And so Chile has two of them. And as I said, they have another place called the Atacama Desert where they're doing research. They're trying to mimic the atmosphere and the ground realities of Mars. And they're checking to see under the dirt. And I guess they're doing their own kind of experiments where they're seeing how life forms can evolve in such a dry place. Because when they do, they have a rover in Mars now. They have two rovers. They're sending a third one. And one day they hope to send humans. They want to have a good background on how can they expect to find life forms on Mars. And when they go to the Atacama Desert, that's the next closest thing to Mars on Earth. Okay, so here, go back to the article. Knowing the exact coordinates, Ryder and his team were able to focus Hubble on that location 12 years later as the supernova's glow faded. So what happens is when they first saw it, I believe in 2001 or 2004, then the supernova's bright. For a few weeks, it's very bright, and then it starts to, the glow begins to subside. So what they did 12 years later, they focused their telescopes on the supernova's glow as it faded. With Hubble's exquisite resolution and ultraviolet capability, they were able to find and photograph the surviving companion, something only Hubble could do. So again, this is basically, it could be a new and potentially evolving field of science where they are searching for survivors. So they could be stars or they can be planets. So as all stars do, they eventually go through their life cycle. And when they get off the main sequence at the end of their life cycle, they either go supernova or they turn into red giants. And after they turn into a red giant, they expose their outer layers. And what is left, it's called a planetary nebula. But that's what our sun will do. So can the planets survive that process? And now they found, or can the companion star survive that process? So again, our star is unique in that it's a single star system. The next closest star system, the Alpha Centauri, it's a three-star system. So those are smaller stars, but that's why our star is a majority. And it'd be interesting to see when you see Star Wars, the first episode, in the beginning of the film, when Luke's going to bed, there's two suns setting. So some stars, some systems have two, three, four, five, six stars. So you wonder whether planets can survive. And in this particular article, they're trying to see if a companion star can survive. So now what am I going to do? I'm going to go on a break now. And after I go on the break, I'm going to finish up this article and hopefully move on to something else. So we listened to the angry listener, didn't we? So let's see what the next one is. I'm trying to get the promo. You know what? It's not coming up. So give me a sec. This machine. So what I think I'm going to do is first play my music. After I play my music, I'm going to play a promo. And when we get back, we're going to talk more astronomy. So thank you for listening. We'll be right back on Marco's Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
If I'm a Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girl, sporting, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool black shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup is stopping. Introduced like I'm shining, you my destiny. In your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you. Perfume down to your structure. Think I wait till a second.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up a disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot take the curve, girl, put your ass on the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a head on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back. Take it from the back. Like a bag you're supposed to. I know you like that. Scream with the neighbors when they sleep. Grab the sheets with your teeth. Wiggle your butt cheeks. Pour the styles over your body. Lift you up. Treat you like a convenience store. Slick you up. Take you to the balcony. Pick you up. So you can look at the city while I'm digging your kitty. Then we drive into the sunset. Pull over. Get up on the hood, ma. I ain't done yet.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not.
She'll make a lovely doll after I finish with you. I told you your webs were useless.
Spider-Man! He's melting!
It's too hot. It's too hot. Something must have hit the control lever. Turn it off.
Want to save energy and keep yourself comfortable? Turn down your thermostat 1 degree Celsius or consider installing a programmable thermostat. If every household in BC with electric space heating turned down their heat by 1 degree for 8 hours a day, it would save enough electricity to power science world for over 75 years. This Power Smart Play brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM.
Welcome back. This is Marco with my cousin Giorgio. My cousin Giorgio came by. Say hi, Giorgio. So that's George. I don't know if you heard him. So he's my good cousin. I was close with his mother, and he is from, and he's coming to watch Marco work the boards. So we're talking about the companion of the supernova, and it seems to have survived. So again, this is on www.nasa.gov. Just wait. It's called Stellar Thief is a Surviving Companion to a Supernova. So what happens usually when you have a supernova, you have, if there's a companion star, the companion star gets blown apart. It gets blown to bits because of the energy of the supernova explosion is so great that that it just destroys anything around it, and that would go doubly for planets. Now what happens, they're wondering, when our star starts to expand towards the end of our life cycle, it will go red giant. It will become a red giant star, and its outer envelope will expand many times over. So it's going to probably swallow up Mercury, then Venus, then Earth is next. So there's another theory that's saying as the star gets bigger, it is pushing the other planets out. And not just that, what is happening is that as the star gets bigger, it loses mass. That's strange. It seems doesn't make sense that if something gets bigger, it loses mass, but that's what happens to the star. And stars are self-regulating, so as it loses mass, it somehow regulates itself and it starts expanding. So when it starts expanding and losing mass, it will become lighter. That's what losing mass means. And its gravitational effect on the outer planets will be less. So some scientists are hypothesizing that as our sun gets bigger and loses mass, its gravity will become weaker. That means the outer planets will start to move out, because if the gravity is weaker, then it will slowly release those planets. So, but still most scenarios have the sun being swallowed up by our star. And when the star, after a certain time, it'll blow off its outer layers and it'll become a white dwarf. So there are things scientists are looking. Do planets survive this white dwarf process of this? The star has expanded, it's blown off its outer layers, and because it's gotten bigger, it eats up a lot of the planets. It goes out to their orbit and it envelops them, it burns them up. So that's what they think is going to happen to Earth. So in this particular process, it's not that they're looking for a planet that survived a process, they're looking for a star. So a star went supernova, and we all know supernovas are among the most powerful things in our universe. They pack a lot of energy, they blow out a lot of energy and a lot of matter, a lot of particles, and they could destroy anything in its wake. But in this particular galaxy, this particular supernova, SN2001IG, so that's a small I, small g, astronomers with three different telescopes, with a very large telescope array. This was done in 2002, and with the Gemini Observatory in 2004. And again, both these telescopes are high in the Chilean mountains. And now with the Hubble Space Telescope, which offers the best vantage, and because it's free from the obscuring effects of our atmosphere, they saw the companion. So scientists are happy to see that the companion survived. Okay, so knowing the exact coordinates, Ryder and his team were able to focus Hubble on a location 12 years later as the supernova's glow faded. So in the first few weeks, the supernova is very bright, then it fades. With Hubble's exquisite resolution and ultraviolet capability, they were able to find and photograph the surviving companion, something only Hubble can do. Prior to the supernova explosion, the orbit of the two stars around each other took about a year. So these stars orbited each other in a one-year period. And when the primary star exploded, it had far less impact on the surviving companion than might be thought. Imagine an avocado pit representing the dense core of the companion star embedded in a gelatin dessert representing the star's gaseous envelope. As a shock wave passes through, the gelatin might temporarily stretch and wobble, but the avocado pit would remain intact. In 2014, Fox and his team used Hubble to detect the companion of another type 2B supernova, SN1993J. So again, supernovas are classified in different ways. I think a type 1A supernova is a core collapse supernova. That means a big star has just burned itself out. It's at the end of its life and it just explodes in on itself. That's a type 1A supernova. So this is a type 2B supernova where there's companions. There's two stars that orbit each other and gas is siphoned off. And because of this process, one of them explodes. So in 2014, Fox and his team used Hubble to detect the companion of another type 2B supernova, SN1993 Big J. However, they captured a spectrum, not an image. The case of SN2001G is the first time a surviving companion has been photographed. So says Alex Filipenko of the University of California, Berkeley, and quote, "We were finally able to catch the stellar thief, confirming our suspicions that one had to be out there," end quote. Okay, so let me go over something here. I said, however, they captured a spectrum, not an image. So a spectrum is like you see a rainbow of light. You know, you look in the sky, you see a rainbow. So what happens is these supernovas give off all kinds of light in ultraviolet, in visible light, in infrared, all these. And they can capture a spectrum of that to tell what kind of light was given off, or if it's in the visible spectrum, what color of light. So here they caught the Stellar Thief. Before, they could only catch a spectrum, which means they caught the spectrum of that source. They didn't actually see the source. So they saw the light or the colors coming off the source, not the source itself. So says Alex Filipenko. They were actually able to photograph the star for the first time. So that's an exciting thing for these astronomers. So perhaps as many as half of all stripped envelope supernovas have companions, though the other half lose their outer envelopes via stellar winds. Ryder and his team have the ultimate goal of precisely determining how many supernovas with stripped envelopes have companions. Their next endeavor is to look at completely stripped envelope supernovas as opposed to SN 2001 small I small g or supernova 1993J, which were only about 90% stripped. So what does that mean? Only about 90% stripped. So their envelopes were only 90%. Okay, so it seems that the companion stripped off only 90% of the gas. So that's what it means. The companion stripped off a certain amount of gas from the other star, not all the gas. Now they're looking for completely stripped envelope supernovas, and they say these completely stripped supernovas don't have much shock interaction with gas in the surrounding stellar environment, since the outer envelopes were lost long before the explosion. Without shock interaction, they fade much faster. This means that the team will only have to wait 2 or 3 years to look for surviving companions. Okay, so what happens is after a supernova, so for example, let's look at Betelgeuse. So Betelgeuse, I guess it's 50 light years away in the constellation Orion. I could be wrong, 250, I'm not sure. But it's losing a lot of its outer layers as it becomes big. So it's nearing the end of its life cycle. And when a star does that, because of the interior working of the stars, first the hydrogen is burned up, then helium, then they make oxygen, carbon. And as this process goes through, there's a self-regulating mechanism in the star which balances the gravity, the volume, all these things, and the star either expands or contracts at certain levels. And also during the process of expansion, it's losing its outer layers. So some of these supernovas, after they go off, it's after they have lost a lot of their outer envelope, because even our gas, even our sun, it's losing matter every second to the solar wind. So as the solar wind leaves the star, that's mass. So it loses mass every second. And our star is expanding, and it's going through a process, and it's self-regulatory process of fusion in the center of the core. It will start to expand. So that's what happens to these big stars. They expand and they lose a lot of their surrounding material or their outer atmosphere. And it says here in this article, supernovas don't have much shock interaction, these completely stripped envelope supernovas don't have much shock interaction with the gas in the surrounding stellar environment. So that means that if they lose a lot of their gas before the supernova, there is less gas that's interacting with the surrounding environment. So some of them will have less of an effect with their surrounding environment. So it seems to me that what these scientists are saying is this star that they studied, a lot of its gas was lost prior to it going supernova. So if it loses a lot of its gas prior to going supernova, the explosion won't be as dramatic, it won't be as energetic, and therefore their outer envelopes have been lost before the explosion, so they don't dramatically affect the outer environment as much as they would if they had kept all their gas. So it seems without this shock interaction, they fade faster, their explosion's not as strong, and this means that these stars have a chance of surviving. So it seems that for many reasons, they're surprised that they thought they existed, but again, we have to look back to the beginning of the article when it says Hubble has a limited view. So right now they're looking at this system. It's called Supernova 2001 small I small j small g, and it was 40 million light years ago away. So what happens, it exploded 40 million years ago, and it took 40 million years for that light to reach us. So I think they're saying is that's the limit of Hubble's capability. It can only see about 40 million light years away. So there's lots of these things probably happening. In our galaxy, it's about 100,000 light years across. So there's maybe some supernovas out there that Hubble cannot see, especially if we're on one side of the galaxy and we're trying to look through the center of the galaxy where there's a lot of dust, a lot of gas, a lot of stars, and there's our supermassive black hole. Now, consider this. There's probably other galaxies like 2 billion, 5 billion light years away. We can't even see those because Hubble cannot see that. Okay, so here they found Alex Filipenko and the team are very happy because they did find a companion that survived the supernova explosion of its binary companion. Okay, so their next endeavor is to look at completely stripped envelope supernovas as opposed to 2001 IG and supernova 1993, which were only about 90% stripped. These completely stripped supernovas don't have much shock interaction with gas in the surrounding stellar environment. I think I've read that, but I'm reading it again. Since their outer envelopes were lost long before the explosion, without shock interaction, they fade much faster. This means that the team will only have to wait 2 or 3 years to look for surviving companions. And it also means that because they lost a lot of their surrounding environment, probably they're not as strong as before. In the future, they also hope to use the James Webb Space Telescope to continue their search. So that's going to be the real killer telescope, the James Webb Space Telescope, and that was delayed again till 2020. Okay, so the paper on this team's current work was published on March 18, 2018 in the Astrophysical Journal. So it's the March issue. So I'm going to try to get Alex Filipenko. He seems like a really nice guy. Sometimes it's hard to get these people. I've tried to get professors here and NASA astronauts, and they delay, and then finally I get him on 6 months later. Sometimes I don't get him on at all, but I'm sure Alex Filipenko would be. He's a great scientist. He's very often on these TV shows. So anyway, you know what? I had the big surprise today. My cousin Giorgio came to visit me, and I did a show today on Stellar Thief is surviving its host. So I was also interested in looking at another article, and you know what? I deleted it. So anyway, thank you for listening. So as I said again, this Tuesday I'm going to have Trina Ray on. She's a mission scientist in the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. They run a lot of NASA missions, and they were doing the Saturn Cassini mission. And I'm going to have her on. I'm going to interview for an hour. We're going to talk about the final dive of Cassini between the rings of Saturn and the Saturn itself, and then it burned up in the atmosphere. So that was a sad day for them. Imagine dedicating the spacecraft took 4 to 6 years to get to Saturn, and then it orbited in the Saturn system for 13 years. So these people were on this project even before launch for about 20 years of their life, and now the spacecraft is gone. So I'm going to interview Trina Ray, and I hope to talk to you guys next week. So this is Marco, and I'm signing off. You have been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.